Welcome to the Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book Sales Day call. My name is Ellen, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Michelle Behar, Public Relations Specialist for Cox Automotive. Ms. Behar, you may begin.
Good morning, and thank you for joining this month's Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book Sales Day conference call. Both Alec Gutierrez, Senior Analyst for Kelley Blue Book, and Michelle Krebs, Executive Analyst for Auto Trader, will be speaking today on June 2017 results, followed by a Q&A session. First, we have Alec Gutierrez.
Thanks, Michelle, and thanks, everyone, for joining us on July 3rd, following June sales. Watching the results as they've come in this morning, we've seen the industry maintain a relatively strong performance overall. As we know, similar to previous months, the overall SAR has been trending at below a 17 million unit selling pace. It's widely expected as we believe that this year will exhibit a bit of a contraction over the record-setting years that we've seen over the last two. Our forecast for the month called for SAR of about 16.3 million overall. After viewing the results with most major players having reported, it looks as though we're on pace for more like 16.4, perhaps 16.5 million SAR. So again, slightly above forecast. In terms of volume, we are expecting about 1,460,000 units, or about a 3.6% decline year over year. And again, now we're looking at about a 3% decline year over year, so about a 0.5% improvement versus original forecast. Out of the major manufacturers, the biggest miss was General Motors, who missed our forecast, which called for about 252,000 units by about 10 or 11,000 units overall. Digging into the numbers a little bit, it looks as though there were fewer rental units than we had previously anticipated, which GM has communicated their strategy of reducing rental in favor of focusing on retail sales and really keeping an eye on residuals. So it looks as though they continue to try to execute against that strategy. Looking at expectations for the year, our forecast right now calls for about 17.1 million units overall. We're still generally on track for that sort of a selling pace, although we should keep in mind that the second half of the year in 2016 was very, very strong. It was a strong close to the year. So it would require certainly another strong finish for the second half of 2017 to maintain that focus. So there always is the possibility that sales could come in slightly below expectation, but for now the numbers look good. Overall, from a macro perspective, in terms of segment preferences, not much has shifted there. If you look at the strong performers last month, Silverado, F-Series, Ram Pickup continue to have very, very strong performances and really lead the portfolios for their respective manufacturers. Gas prices remain very affordable nationwide at about $2.21 per gallon nationally, obviously a little more expensive in major metro areas and here on the West Coast. Unemployment remains below 5%. Consumer confidence is still very high. Financial markets have been performing well. So again, from a macro perspective, from a kind of financial well-being perspective, the market is still on stable footing. Finally, to wrap it up before I turn it over to Michelle Krebs, just looking at some of the finance metrics that we have out there. In terms of average transaction prices, you're looking at about $34,400 per unit, a 1.5% increase year over year. We continue to see consumers pay more and more for new cars in the marketplace. Again, keep in mind that a lot of that is attributed to the shift in mix sold at retail. As we've commented on previously, if you look at overall segment share, you have mid-sized cars with sales down about 18% so far this year. You have compact cars with sales down about 6% so far this year, while on the other end of the spectrum, you've got full-size pickup trucks enjoying a 4.5% increase in sales, mid-size SUVs and crossovers up almost 10%. So, again, part of the increase in transaction prices is really being driven by the fact that consumers are opting for more expensive units. SUVs, crossovers, trucks tend to exhibit higher transaction prices than midsize and small cars overall. In terms of incentive spend, we're still looking at about $3,500 per unit, which is about roughly 10% higher than we saw at this time last year. In terms of incentives as a percent of ATP, the industry is slightly over 10%, which is generally in line with the higher end of that ratio, which we've been watching since about 2005. We're at 10.2% today. The last time we saw this high was back in 2005 and 2006, which was a few years prior to the bursting of the real estate bubble and the subsequent decline in the economy and automotive industry. And with that, I will turn it over to Michelle Krebs for her insights and perspectives.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on this very weird sales day in terms of timing. I would say that just emphasizing some of the things that Alex said, June sales numbers reaffirm that we are in what we're calling a post-peak phase. If any of you who attended our mid-year media briefing last week, we talked about this. Since last December's big surge in sales to close out the year for another record, we've seen the sales pace decline from those levels. But we still think that the market's on track for a pretty strong year, but certainly below the past. I think the other thing that we should note is the companies are maintaining pretty good discipline. We are seeing the scheduled downtime to lower inventories. While incentives are high, we note that they're being targeted more. It's not just lathering them on, but targeting them more. We see good fundamentals. Obviously, there's a great divide between the cars and sport utilities. If you just looked at GM and Ford, you'd see the cars off 30% or more. Some of that's retail, but some of it's where they're cutting back daily rental fleets. And at the same time, on the opposite side of the ledger, you see double-digit increases for sport utility vehicles. On the financial side, too, we've seen a discipline. We're not across the board, but generally speaking, keeping fleet sales in check, incentives in check, or at least targeted in production in check. On the credit side, too, we are seeing a bit of backing off of leasing and a bit of backing off of subprime lending to better balance the credit portfolios. We still see good fundamentals. Consumer confidence is high. Unemployment is low. So there's still this underlying strength to support a decent vehicle market. We are paying attention to higher interest rates and uncertainty around various fiscal and political policies and what that will do to economic growth. The other thing we are seeing are some what we call tailwinds that have turned to headwinds. We are seeing an influx of off-lease vehicles that are giving some competition to new car sales. So that will be something we will watch not only this year but over the next few years. But we think fundamentally, the market is reasonably strong off peak, but there's an underlying the financial houses of the automakers are in pretty good shape, and they're being fairly disciplined, so we don't see any kind of crazy imbalances going on. So with that, I'd say let's open up to your questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. There will be a delay before the first question is announced. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Our first question is from Nathan Bomey with USA Today.
Hi, Nathan.
Hey, guys. Looking, I guess, broader than just June, looking at the first half of the year, what has sort of surprised you about this year versus, and then what do you take away primarily from it? Just trying to get the overall here, not just looking at the last month, but this year. I mean, is it sort of just a sign that we're permanently off those peaks and we're not going back to that 17.5 million anytime soon?
Alec, you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. So, I think in terms of surprises for me, I guess I would look at the rate at which some of these car segments have declined. I spoke to it a little bit earlier, but when you look at an 18% decline year over year in mid-sized car sales, a 6% decline in small car sales, even subcompact cars down, 15%, I think we knew that SUVs and trucks were picking up a lot of momentum, and certainly on the other end of the spectrum, they've been doing very well in terms of sales performance. But to just see that rate of decline for what amounts to, very, very strong products, right? You look at the new midsize cars that are out there in the marketplace. You look at even the domestic, Malibu, Fusion, very strong entrance, even though the Fusion is getting to be a little bit long in the tooth. Accord and Camry are still very strong, and they're doing well. So, I think when you look at it, it just says or speaks to the fact that to compete in those segments, you can't be good or even very good. You've got to be just absolutely fantastic to get consideration from consumers today. So that's the one thing that jumped out to me. On your other question, as far as I know we're past peak at the moment, but will we never see 17.5 million units again? As we've always said, the manufacturers will sell really as many cars as they choose to produce and then incentivize. So I think what I will say is that I think it's been encouraging to see the level of discipline that we've seen thus far. Incentives are up. We're up about 10% year over year. But at the same time, we have seen a targeted cutback in production. We have seen, as is the case with GM, for example, cutbacks into sales, into rental. So there is recognition that the market is cooling off a bit and manufacturers are adjusting rather than just continue to pile on more and more incentives. So that's been a positive surprise from my perspective. But those are the two trends I would point to.
And I would say, Nathan, too, I just would emphasize the same. I don't think we anticipated this plummet in car sales. And I think one of the interesting tests will be when the new Camry comes on and the new Accord come on this year, will those, we're anticipating they may cause the market to bump up a bit, but we'll have to watch that. I think the other big surprise for us is Jeep. Jeep was down 11% in June. It's had a tough year. Yes, Jeep is shifting around some models, but this is Jeep's market, and it's not capitalizing on it. So I think one has to ask, is there something more going on with Jeep than just shifting around some of the its models? And I guess I've been a little surprised at the good discipline that manufacturers have shown. We kept wondering if someone going no play on a Nissan term, but go rogue on incentives and really go crazy.
Yeah.
So that's been encouraging to watch them being disciplined about incentives, which are high, but being used much more strategically. And there has been a willingness to cut production when it's needed.
Well, just real quick, do you think that we're going to hit an inflection point at some point with cars where we could see more automakers than just Chrysler just basically giving up on cars? There has to be if the decline continues at this pace, there's got to be a point at which some people really dramatically pull back, right?
Well, I think I will bet you that in every product planning room in among all the automakers, they are looking at their balance of production capacity, and they have to be thinking about this is a permanent trend, and do we have too much car capacity, and should we switch that over to sport utility capacity? But also remember, Nathan, despite the fact that these car segments are dropping precipitously, they're still big segments, and segments like the compact segment, that's still a gateway to a brand. So they can't give them up completely, but certainly I would anticipate we'll see a shifting around of capacity.
Okay,
much as like Ford has done.
Mm-hmm.
The next question is from Tracy Samuelson from Michigan Radio. Please go ahead.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi. So I had a question about this affordability issue and mm-hmm. these longer loans, and then it kind of occurred to me when you were talking about this shift to the larger cars. This is like consumer choice. People are choosing to take on, you know, these bigger loans. They're basically feeling what? So good about the future of low gas prices and the economy that they're shifting themselves into these larger, more expensive cars?
Well, I think there's two different market dynamics going on. In terms of the affordability issue, we see some people just frozen out of the new car market altogether. And then the ones who can just afford are really extending the terms. You know, then there are others who are, you know, can't afford. They're opting for the top of the line versions full of all of the technology. So there's just like in our overall society, there's this great divide in terms of buyer capability. I think that's the way to say it.
Just to add a little bit to that as well. I mean, it's all a question of trade-offs, right? I think it is indicative of consumers really expressing their true interests, right? We saw prior to the automotive and U.S. and really global economic recession, you look at the top-selling segments back in the early 2000s, even mid-2000s, right? And you had cars like, or SUVs like the Explorers and Trailblazers and certainly full-size pickups that were doing very, very well. And those were cars, you know, built on traditional ladder frames with horrible fuel economy. I mean, I think those old Explorers would get, you know, 12, 13 miles per gallon. Today's market, you know, has crossovers and trucks that are far more fuel efficient than they used to be. And again, when you talked about the trade-off, if you're someone that's, say, a Honda intender and you're looking to say, well, do I get the Accord, which might, you know, run 24, 25,000, or do I step up and get something like a CRV, which from a safe perspective is going to be on par with a little bit better visibility with only, you know, maybe a 2 or 3 MPG penalty for maybe $2,000 more. You know, I think you're finding folks willing to make that trade-off, because if you're talking about a $2,000 or $3,000 price bump, that's, you know, what, $40, $50, $60 a month. So they are expressing a little more confidence in the future, but at the same time, the manufacturer has done a good job of really establishing a higher degree of parity between CUVs and traditional sedans. So I think that's a big part of the shift as well.
And I think they look at it, what will this vehicle do for me? A sport utility vehicle, you know, can do more things for the household. And I think certainly, you know, millennials that have car seats for their children that are driving some of that too. Is that what you need, Tracy? Did we lose her?
Are you there?
There you are. Okay.
There I am. Just in the past 6 months, have you seen any more shifting of consumers going to the longer lengths, up to 72-month loans?
Boy, I don't know if I have the Alec, do you have the latest numbers? My hunch is yes.
No, I'm sorry. I couldn't make out the question. What latest numbers? What are you asking for?
She asked the question, have more people gone to longer term loans? I don't remember the latest numbers we have.
They have, so that trend has been continually shifting up. I'm trying to think of the latest metric. I want to say the average new car loan term is something like 68 months.
Right.
It's somewhere between 5 and 6 years. And if you look at it from that's just the average, right? So if you think of the average is at 66, 68 months. If you look at the share of loans that are 72, 84 months, you know, you're talking about the tails now, but that share has been increasing. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but you are seeing more and more folks take, you know, these incredibly long loans. Not to mention the fact that if you're not taking a longer loan, you're probably looking at a lease, right? You still have about just under or right around 30% of all retail sales being accounted for by lease. But while we didn't really get into it in the call, that is certainly an area of risk as we look ahead to 2018, 2019, because if the manufacturers continue to have to rely upon leasing to drive sales, it's not going to be so easy, because we are seeing and expect to see continued off-lease inventory at auctions, which in turn has started to put some degree of downward pressure on used car values, which will impact residuals, which will make it more costly for manufacturers to rely on leasing, let alone if interest rates start to creep up, which they haven't really too much thus far, but if they do, again, it'll be a challenge moving forward. But yes, so the short answer is yes, longer-term loans and share of longer-term loans has been increasing steadily.
And I would add, too, Tracy, that I think the average for millennials is 70 months.
Mm. Okay, so it's on the high end.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Thanks.
The next question is from Nick Zilovich with Subprime Auto Finance News.
Good morning and happy New Year, or excuse me, happy 4th of July to all of you. Continuing on the financing questioning here, I guess if I could just elaborate again on just the pressures or developments that you're seeing as far as consumers wanting more, but their budgets perhaps not allowing for more as far as a vehicle goes, and how dealerships are working with finance companies to get the deliveries made. Just what's your overall sense of how that element is kind of gaining some momentum of consumers wanting more and dealers and finance companies trying to do their best to satisfy those customers?
Yeah, I think I'll comment on it first, Michelle. I mean, I think stepping back and looking at the macro trends, I mean, I think you've certainly hit on something in the sense that, you know, we talked earlier about, yeah, consumer confidence is doing well, the financial markets, you know, you look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, very, very strong numbers there. Unemployment rate is below 5%, right? So all of those numbers are all well and good, but at the same time, if you look at, you know, real wages, there really hasn't been much in the way of growth from that perspective. So while you have folks, you know, working again and feeling optimistic about the future, that purchasing power has not really kept pace with the increase in certainly new car transaction prices, let alone the used car market, which still remains extraordinarily strong. So I think from that perspective, just to get into a new car, consumers have to stretch to some extent. Let alone that once you're at the dealership and you have so many options now that to drive the price up when you look at not only the basic cost of production for the average car. I mean, you're talking about Civics transacting, you know, at $22,000-$23,000. But now you have all of these, you know, options for advanced safety features like adaptive cruise and lane departure warning systems and the list goes on and on. So I think these features have resonated. Consumers opt to try and stretch for them, and thus why captive finance companies and other banks and financial institutions that are engaged in automotive lending have been stretching out and offering longer-term loans at very reasonable rates. In fact, in some cases, I know with, not to pick on GM in particular, but I know I've seen it from them a little bit more so than others. You know, they'll even go so far as to offer 72-month financing at 0%. Now, granted, you've got to be, you know, have top-tier credit to qualify for that sort of rate. It's not across their portfolio. It's usually only on slower-selling inventory. But at the same time, these sorts of programs are out there. So I think finance companies recognize the need of the consumers to stretch their dollar a little bit further. They've been more than willing to extend and bend their lending requirements to meet that demand. And thus far, they haven't been penalized in the sense that delinquency rates and repossessions and all of those, you know, kind of banking metrics that they really follow to gauge the health of the auto lending market. There's been, you know, slight upticks in terms of repossessions and delinquencies in at least in terms of the subprime tiers and in some cases even the prime credit tiers, but the numbers are still extraordinarily low from a historical perspective. So they haven't really been punished for extending out and offering longer-term loans. So So hopefully that helps to answer your question a little bit, Nick.
Absolutely. Michelle, anything to add?
No, I would just add, too, we've also seen when that there was that uptick in defaults, there was a little bit of tightening in the subprime lending that we saw, and so that's come back down. And like Alex say, it's car loans are a pretty good bet for lenders. People make their car payments, sometimes before their mortgages.
Excellent. Thank you all again.
Thank you.
The next question is from Joe Overby with Auto Remarketing.
Hi, Joe.
Morning, y'all. Morning. Thanks for the call, guys. Michelle, you mentioned the, and Alec, you touched on it as well, just the off-lease volume putting pressure on new car sales. How many incremental used car sales do you think that might lead to from a full-year perspective, the, increase in off-lease volume?
You mean taking new car sales? Is that what you mean? Or?
Sure. Right. But new car sales that, would have been new car sales that end up as used car retail sales.
I don't think we have a number, but maybe, Alec, you know better than I do.
Yeah, I don't know that I have a good number, but it's kind of tough because on the one hand, you have all these buyers that are coming back off lease, right? And that number is increasing each and every year. I think this year, in terms of raw volume of units expected to return to the marketplace off lease, it's something like 500,000 incremental over 2016. So I think it takes us, and forgive me, I have to look at the specific, it either takes us from 3 million to 3.5 or 3.5 to 4 million. It's one of those two. And the numbers will increase next year and the year after because you're talking about 30% of a growing baseline of retail sales. So on the one hand, all those folks that are turning in their vehicles off lease, we know they're lease intenders. We know they're likely going to continue to be new car shoppers. So that does replenish the pool of potential new car intenders. On the other hand, that off lease unit is now going to be sitting side by side a new car as a certified pre-owned unit, likely at a bit of a discount, so you're going to have a more price-sensitive buyer now looking to go used, potentially, or certified pre-owned, as opposed to new. Do those numbers perfectly offset? It's hard to say. It's hard to gauge, but we certainly can say that we know year after year, and I think this year will be no exception, but we continue to see record numbers of certified pre-owned sales. So there is certainly evidence to support the fact that rising off-lease volume does create a substitute for price-sensitive buyers and thus does potentially, quote-unquote, steal a new car sale. So the real question is, those folks returning their car off-lease, if they stick to a new car sale, that could be enough to offset the potential new car sale loss to a used car buyer. But as far as, how aggressively the pendulum swings in one direction or the other, it's tough for us to put a hard number on that. But in terms of the raw volume, the number to pay attention to is about 500,000 units incrementally year over year that will return off lease this year and likely next year and the year after.
But in contrast to that, too, Joe, is the fact that we put all these people into long-term loans and many of them are going to be stuck, so they're going to be out of the new car market for a while. So that's another aspect of this whole equation that's hard to get a handle on exactly how the numbers play out.
Gotcha. Well, good to you guys. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from Jordan Grislewski with The Vindicator.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Jordan.
Hello.
Hey,
yeah, cruise sales were bad.
Yeah, how significant is that?
Well, it's a continuing story. I know they've scheduled downtime, or taken off a third shift, and I believe they've got some, do they have some downtime now or coming up?
Yeah, they're on a layoff right now.
Yeah, yeah. I would anticipate if we, the cruise is getting this double whammy, and all cars, small to medium size, because they get this double whammy of retail buyers are preferring sport utility vehicles and automakers are trying to cut back on daily rental fleets. So the cruise is a perfect example of that. I would not be surprised at all if we see continued downtime scheduled at the Lordstown plant to cut down crews inventories to put it in line with sales.
Yeah, if there's one positive to take away, though, I was just kind of revisiting the GM release, and it does indicate that through the first half of the year, the crews had their best retail performance since 2014 and their best June ever, I want to say. So at least at retail, the crews is doing, or maybe that's the best June ever retail, but June was up 3% year over year, so I think Michelle hit it right on the head in the sense that the crews was a unit that was heavily sold into rental, so GM's targeted strategy to reduce those sales has impacted crews, you know, more so than perhaps some of their other nameplates, but from a retail perspective, it's holding its own and doing relatively well with versus prior results. So those are the important sales. That's what really matters. If retail consumers see the value in the vehicle and choose that over, you know, the very, very strong Cruze or Corolla, you know, that certainly says something. But with the focus reduction on fleet, the aggregate numbers are going to continue to be tough for Cruze.
Okay. Well, thank you.
The next question is from Tyrell Linkhorn with Toledo Blade newspaper.
Hi, Tyrell.
Hello, coming in from the other side of the state now.
Exactly, and I bet I know what vehicle you're going to ask about.
Well, yeah, I'm going to ask about Jeep. I'll ask another one first, though. I guess as sales are kind of shifting toward the SUVs and the trucks, which tend to be a higher profit margin vehicle for the automakers, you know, is this lower sales, I guess, not necessarily a gauge of their health because of the way the market is shifting?
Are you talking about Fiat, Chrysler?
In general, across the industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll just kind of open it up. I mean, I think that's a fair assessment, Terrell, in the sense that, yeah, overall volume might be down for some of these manufacturers year over year, but at the same time, you know, if more of your portfolio sales are in trucks or larger sport utilities, your margin might actually be a little bit stronger, right? Your midsize cars, small cars, especially subcompacts, the front end and back end margin on those at the dealership is almost nothing, right? In some cases, dealers will take a loss on a new car sale.
Mm-hmm.
In those segments, because the hope is that they're able to make it up on either retailing the trade or on F&I sales. Now, that's more the dealership's financial model than the manufacturer, but the margins aren't much better for the manufacturers who are likely barely breaking even on a lot of these small car sales to really justify their larger, more profitable units. So from a profitability perspective, yeah, I think you look at the numbers from GM, I believe they had a relatively decent quarter last time they announced for Q1. I think the other manufacturers have had stable, if not strong, performances. So, yeah, I think there's an argument to be made there that these sales are more profitable, they're a little bit smarter, and even if overall volume is down a bit, it's still a profitable business to be in with consumer preferences for trucks and SUVs where they are.
I would agree with that, but it is a little concerning that Fiat Chrysler is, you know, we know that there's pretty hefty incentives on Ram, and, you know, I think the Jeep situation is concerning. That's their crown jewel, and I guess I would ask the question, is it just a matter of them shifting around their model lineup? I'm not so sure. I think that we need to dig into that more.
And that kind of leads into my next question, because, you know, as a company, they sort of bet the farm on trucks and SUVs. Ram's doing okay, some high incentives, but really all of their SUVs has been weak. The Jeep brand is makes up the bulk of that, but their Dodge SUVs haven't really been great either. Is that concerning for them as a company, and do you have any guess of what may be happening with Jeep beyond all of this kind of footprint shifting?
Well, you know, I wonder, and I can't substantiate this. You know, Fiat Chrysler in general has been at the bottom of the quality charts. Look at every survey. And I wonder if some of that's coming back to haunt Fiat Chrysler. That concerns me. Now, the Pacifica, I understand that the quality has been extremely good. But that has to be, if I worked at Fiat Chrysler, I'd be doing a really deep dive into exactly what's happening on Jeep. Is it just, and will the new products turn that around?
Mm-hmm.
And they've got some aged product in there, too. I mean, Durango and, they don't have a slew of new products every year as some of the other manufacturers do. It's kind of one this year, one next year, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, a lot of what's new is hot. And so that's why there's has to be this constant and frequent refresh on products.
And some of those Jeeps are, we've got the new Compass and the Renegade is
right.
New, but,
right.
but those are doing okay, but, okay. All right. That'll do it.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
And we have no further questions at this time.
Great. Keep an eye out for next month's call-in details. If you need anything else, please feel free to reach out to the public relations team, and we'll be happy to help. Thank you all for joining, and have a great day.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.